Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to withdraw your question, please press star two. And our first question comes from the line of Julian Mitchell with Credit Suisse. Please proceed.
Yes, thanks. I was intrigued by the commentary on a, you know, it definitely sounds like a better outlook for you in gas turbines than what you were thinking as recently as December or January. Could you give a little bit more color sort of by region, what you're seeing? And I think last year you had 96 gas turbine orders globally. Can you give a sense of, you know, given we're now in late April, what your view is on gas turbine orders for this year?
Well, look, Julian, I'd say that the outlook does feel a little better. If you remember at the end of the year when we met and talked about what the outlook was going to be, we had about 112, 113 gas turbines last year in shipment. We said we'd be down about 10. Today the team is you know, working on looking at opportunities to maybe be at least flat and put some more in the production schedule if we could to be prepared for the growth that we're seeing some incoming orders, activity, inquiries, and things like that that we're working on. Obviously, the Middle East has been very strong for us. It continues to be strong. We had one order in the quarter out of the orders we had for gas turbines in the U.S., so I think that that's an activity that has to pick up as we go forward. And clearly, as Jeff said, we're really trying to help our customers in Japan. There's an awful lot of capacity that's out, and they're trying to put as much power in place as they can to prepare for the summer, and also to deal with the fact that they've got to replace a lot of power. So I think the team is cautiously optimistic about it, but the outlook is good. We've ramping up the PSI, you know, our outlook for production a little bit in the business, and for 2011 it might be at least flat, maybe better, and 2012 should be better on top of that.
I think, Julian, there's a confluence of maybe, you know, five factors that are going on more or less at the same time. You know, one is you know, clearly global growth in the emerging markets. The second is the need to provide more infrastructure as part of the Japan rebuild. You know, the third is lower natural gas pricing overall. You know, the fourth would be wherever the environmental standards end up in the United States. And then I think the fifth is, you know, and this will be decided by our customers, not by us, is where does the long-term capacity get added vis-a-vis, you know, coal, nuclear, gas, as people add new blocks of power going forward? So I think all those things, you know, make us a little bit more bullish on the gas turbine market.
Thanks. And just a quick follow-up. You know, the pricing environment, I guess it's down. It's a little bit better in terms of the year-on-year decline on thermal pricing in Q1 versus where you were in Q4. But, you know, we saw one of your global peers today, they're joint venturing their boilers business with someone in China. So how do you see sort of the competitive landscape? Is there much changing for you, or you think that as volumes recover, pricing will naturally pick up in the order intake in the second half as well?
You know, that's been the historic pattern, you know, Julian. I think it's, you know, energy tends to be a later cycle, recovery item. And so, you know, the pricing you saw last year was really what played out in the first quarter, and that's historically been the pattern of price activity. The good news is
follow supply and demand. I mean, I think right now we're still dealing with a place. The global capacity was pretty strong, and today I think the demand situation has changed.
You know, one of the strengths of our energy business is the supply chain and our sourcing and things like that, and I think that we're flexible, we're fast, and we do a good job on deflation.
Great, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Bob Cornell with Barclays. Please proceed.
Morning, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Bob's on another call.
Bob, your line is open.
Okay, let's come back to Bob. Yep.
Our next question comes from the line of Terry Darling.
Morning, Terry.
Good morning, Jeff.
Hey, Terry.
Hey, just wondering if we could clarify, just taking a couple of questions on the Garanti gain. Was that in your operating framework before, and we just didn't know exactly the timing? Is that the right way to frame it?
Sure. I last year when we announced the transaction in November, we actually put out a press release that said we were going to have about a $300 million after-tax gain, and we thought it would close in the first half, and then when we knew it was going to close in the first quarter, we announced that. So I think it's been part of what we've had in the framework all along. We had $300 million after-tax, as I said, and then that business had about $60 million of earnings a quarter that we won't have anymore as we go forward.
Perfect. Okay, that's helpful. And then, you know, just coming back to the comment on energy margins, I think I thought I heard Jeff indicate that that should improve, you know, throughout the year. And then, Keith, I think I heard you say down in 2Q, up in the second half. Maybe the you know, maybe you were talking profit dollars and Jeff was talking percent margins, but could we just clarify that?
I was talking total company, Terry. And as the, you know, the margin rates tend to
improve. First quarter is the lowest.
The first quarter always is the lowest for us,
yeah.
Total company. And I think Keith was talking more just energy.
And I think the direction, the gap that we saw in energy quarter over quarter, you know, that profile, it's driven by factors that will continue through the year. You know, the renewals pricing, the higher investments in programs and global growth, and then the dilution from the acquisitions. That profile is pretty similar as you go through the year for energy itself.
Okay. And then just shifting over to Aero, I wonder if you talk about any update on profile of R&D and implications for margins for Aero overall. Got a lot of pieces in the mix there with the aftermarket getting a little better. Maybe you can just break some of those pieces down and talk about military too.
Well, the profile for R&D for aviation, R&D plus launch costs has not changed for us for the total year. We do expect to have that ramp up as we go through the year. The R&D actually was less in the first quarter year over year than last year based on some timing issues. But through the year, we expect to see a ramp up of the Gen X, obviously. We shipped 13 Gen X's in the quarter. As you know, the 787 should be certified and delivering in the third and fourth quarter. And the 747 with the Gen X on it is already just about through all of its certification tests. The engine is done. The plane is still finalizing. And so those are going to ramp up, and R&D is going to ramp up as we ramp up on the TechX and the LeapX. So I think as you go through the year, you're going to see continued reinvestment in aviation. But the offset is the strength of services. We feel pretty good about it. You know, we were looking for when are you going to see it last year based on utilization improving, revenue passenger miles and freight passenger miles up. And you can see that in the order rate up 30%. You know, we feel pretty good about that order rate. And the outlook from the team is that that should continue to be strong for us.
And then, Keith, could you just refresh us on what that year-over-year increase in aviation R&D is now expected at?
Well, aviation, just on R&D itself, is supposed to be up, I think, about, just 1 second,
for total year.
For the total year, it's supposed to grow about 15 to 20%. To about $1.7 billion.
Okay, great. And then lastly,
somewhere in that range.
Just lastly, obviously, you know, nice to see that that stronger performance at GE Capital. And Jeff or Keith, I wonder if you could comment on the potential that that better performance pulls forward the confidence in the in the GE Capital dividend back to parent, and implications for buyback and additional dividend increases from a timing standpoint.
Well, we're obviously feeling pretty good about the progress in GE Capital. You know, you can see the capital ratios, you can see the pre-tax earnings growth, you can see some stabilization in real estate. So I think all those signs are good. You know, there are some uncertainties we have. As you know, the Fed will transition to be our regulator, in the summer here. So I think, you know, the team feels good about it. We've made a lot of progress. We think we're going to be above what the levels are of capital are required for all the different criteria, but that isn't exactly finalized, as you know, as well. And then we got to transition to a new regulator. So, you know, our objective is to, as you know, at a minimum pay a dividend in 2012, and if we could work on that in earlier than that, obviously we would love to do that. But right now the only thing we have in the plan is that we'll restart the dividend from capital in 12, but obviously the progress continues to be pretty strong. And I think it was also encouraging when we saw what the banks were able to do this year between the dividends and the buyback based on their capital and stress case plans. So we're going to work on that.
Yes, nice.
The only thing I would add to that, Terry, is look, I think the major transactions we had planned on doing, we've done. And so dividend and buyback, I think, take a higher priority as I look at the rest of the year. You know, so I think that's the way I would – that's the perspective we had. And we like the deals we did. We think they were opportunistic and strategic and help our energy business. But, you know, again, I think what Keith said, we feel really great about where GE Capital is positioned, and I think priorities in the second half of the year will tend towards dividend and buyback.
We'll look forward to it. Thank you.
Yep.
Your next question comes from the line of Scott Davis with Morgan Stanley. Please proceed.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning, Scott.
Want to switch gears and talk a little bit about healthcare and a couple things. I think, Keith, you said that R&D was up $50 million in the quarter. Now, maybe you meant for the year, so some clarification on that. And then maybe we can talk about why R&D has had to come up in this business. I mean, my understanding was that there was a bit of a pullback in the arms race, if you will, that would require less R&D spend. You know, with Health Imagination. Is that, am I reading things wrong?
All right, first, let me clarify. We did have about $50 million of increased spending year over year in new product launches. About 30 of that was related to our home health joint venture with Intel, so that's a new business we've gone into, and also investments in our solutions business, the consulting business that we're growing and providing a lot of help to hospitals as they manage the need to lower their costs and become more efficient. So about 30 of that's there. And then about 20 is higher NPI for new products. We launched about 45 or 50 new products in the quarter. So we have just really ramped up R&D globally. You know, Omar Ishrak is got control of the entire business, and he's got a terrific model where we have breakthrough technology, and then we flow that down through the product line. And we're trying to make sure we have products at every price point as we participate in these global emerging market growth opportunities. So I think, you know, in some cases, a couple of years ago, we were behind in MR. We've caught back up, and we've got a great position in CT. And today, I think the team really likes the position we have across the entire product line.
But, you know, Scott, I would just add to what Keith said to say, look, we expect this business to have operating profit rate expansion for the year. You know, productivity, cost, you know, our share position is good to improving, and I fully expect healthcare to have operating profit rate expansion in 2Q through 4Q.
Totally agree.
You mean expansion beyond the 7% you showed this quarter? Is that what you mean, Jeff?
Well, I would say double-digit plus operating profit growth and expanding margin rate in healthcare.
Okay.
Okay.
I totally understand. Okay, I know this is it's early days of Japan and the tragedies there, but you know that's a big part of your. It's a fairly large healthcare market overall, and I think it's a fairly important part of your overall mix, if memory serves me right. But what do you hear from the local guys? I mean, is there going to be money diverted from spending on things like healthcare for the rebuilding effort? Does it not change? I mean, is there any sense at all of direction, or is it just too early?
You know, Scott, I just think it's too early. You know, we don't have anything to. You know, if you go back to the Kobe earthquake, right? There was more stimulus put into the overall economy in Japan after that. But I just think it's too early to tell what the impact is going to be.
Okay, and last question, Keith. Some of your competitors and GECAS competitors, IOFC, et cetera, have taken write-downs on their fleets. I mean, to reflect a couple changes. Obviously, new aircraft that's efficient, higher oil prices. It's kind of increased the obsolescence of some of the craft. I mean, is the GECAS portfolio as you see right now pretty much mark to market?
Absolutely. You know, we basically have to do our appraisals every year, and we have to adjust, and you see us take impairments when we go through those reviews if we need to, based on current views of asset values or specific customer situations. I did see that there was a write-down on the A320 family for ILFC, and I think it might be interesting to take a look at the differences in how companies depreciate equipment. You know, most companies depreciate aircraft on a straight line over 25 years to a 15% residual, and we assume a 20-year life to 90% of our average appraised value, which results in an annual depreciation percent that's higher than what a lot of competitors have. So, I we feel pretty good about our values, and we did look at what they did, and we absolutely feel good about where we are in GECAS.
Okay. Very helpful. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Your next question comes from the line of Steve Tusa with J.P. Morgan. Please proceed.
Hi, good morning.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, Steve.
Can you just talk a little bit more about the outlook for gas turbines in the U.S.? So, you know, you're talking about only having one order there and a lot of the activities in the Middle East. But when you talk about the actual quotation activity, can you maybe give us some parameters around, you know, I know quotation activity is a high-level comment, but is there any way to tell us what kind of the magnitude is in the activity globally? So, you know, is it you know, 50-50 U.S.? You know, I'm just curious as to the plans of your customers in the U.S., what you're seeing there.
You know, I don't have any specific numbers on quote activity in the U.S., Steve. I mean, I think what we're basically looking at is the dynamics have really changed subsequent to the disaster and tragedy in Japan. I you know, you see people canceling their plans to continue development of new nuclear plants. Clearly, coal has issues from an environmental perspective and is challenging from a cost and technology perspective to be competitive. You know, we've put a lot of renewable energy into the system, especially in the U.S., but globally, and with gas prices where they are, that's a challenge to make that as economic as it needs to be for financing. And so you come back to what's going to be the power of choice. It's going to be gas, and we think we're well positioned there. You know, we still have reserve margins here in this country, but as you look at retirements and replacement and then new economic growth, we think the outlook is going to be pretty good. I don't have specific order quoting numbers, and I don't know even if I had them whether I'd tell you what they were.
Right, I guess not specifics, but just in general, is it you know, are you it sounds like you are seeing a pretty nice uptick in dialogue with our U.S. customers. I guess that's more the question at a high level.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, the other thing I would say, Steve, is, you know, I think we could see a nice increase in gas turbine demand, even with the U.S. demand not being anywhere close to 50% of it, really.
Totally. You know? You look at Russia, you look at Iraq.
So you just have a lot of other stuff going on, you know, Iraq, Phase 2, Russia, as Keith said. There's more interest in China today in gas turbines.
Saudi Arabia needs power.
So it's all that kind of activity that's that we're seeing as well.
Okay, and then one other question, and this was just in the news the other day, the only reason why I'm asking, but the board reset, you know, the comp package, I guess talking about operating cash flow at, you know, a minimum of $55 billion over a four-year period, and I think there was something about outperforming the S&P 500 as well. I'm just curious as to, you know, the message that you want us to take away from that, because the operating cash flow number, I think, over a four-year period is, you know, only really up modestly from where we are today, and then, you know, outperforming the S&P 500. You know, is that the way we should think about GE stock, as kind of a comp versus the S&P 500, as opposed to, you know, your more in, the more the industrial peers, like you know, the other guys in our sector? I'm just kind of curious as to the message, or at least the message that you would like to kind of have us take away from that change.
You know, Steve, I think what we did is we reverted back to kind of the formula we'd had in place since 2003, which really set two benchmarks. One was an S&P performance, and the other one was a CFOA growth target. So, you know, look, I believe in performance shares. I think it's a good way for CEOs to be compensated, and that's really what it says. You know, I think we'll continue to give you a framework that can spell out, you know, what we think we can do, but you know, we want the company to outperform.
Those were the same targets that we had
those
placed
similar
for
targets
PSUs
we had
the year. All we did was took out the 2010 cash flow.
Right. Okay, thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Jason Feldman with UPS. Please proceed.
Morning.
Good morning, Jason.
Hey, so you've addressed several of the issues related to Japan, including commercial real estate. But and you know, I've seen the release related to the channeling law. But has there been any indication that there could be any potential liability related to the disaster in Japan? And is there anything else at finance that we should think about? Maybe Shinsei losses creeping up over time, or anything else?
You know, Jason, I think on the channeling law, it's really clear and been written about by a lot of different people, and so I think all the things we've said in the past still hold true today, and we haven't seen any indications to anything that would counter that, and mainly because I think it is so clear.
On the other exposures, as you said, you know, we put a little bit up for property damage in Japan, $15 million, and then some reserves, $15 million in the CLL business. But other than that, we really haven't seen any direct impact. We've got real estate, we've got commercial loans and leases, we've got aviation there, and we did a pretty good review of our portfolio with the teams. You know, on Shinsei, on the gray zone, we have seen elevated claims as part of the Takofuji bankruptcy. As everybody knows, those claims really started to decline after the bankruptcy period closed, and they've continued to decline in April. And, you know, right now the trend on claims looks pretty good. However, you know, we're going to have to see how they normalize in Q2 and Q3. But it's obviously hard to determine, you know, what are some of the events that drove some of those claim declines in this period, given some of the challenges in Japan. But right now the trend looks pretty good.
Okay. And also, you've spent a fair amount of time talking about, you know, better opportunities for gas turbines, given new EPA regulations, Fukushima, and everything else. Has there been any change in sentiment, you know, since the EPA regulations came out, since the Fukushima disaster, related to renewables, you know, and potentially also, you know, whether you have some new opportunities perhaps for the offshore wind turbine launch, particularly in Europe?
It's all positive. I think, you know, we're investing a lot in wind, obviously. We're shipping a lot of 2.5 megawatt units, which are a good value proposition. We're doing a lot globally. So we're investing a lot in wind, and we think the business has a future. I think right now we're dealing with just the decline in the U.S. market and the change in margins that we had in that market. But overall, we're very committed to it, and I think you must have seen recently our investments in solar, you know, the announcement that we're going to build a very large solar plant here and have the highest efficiency in the marketplace for thin film solar. So, you know, renewables is a big part of the business. I think it's going to be a part of our portfolio. We're investing a lot in it, and we're just kind of weathering this decline in the shipment of the very profitable U.S. backlog and then the replacement of that in the wind business.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yep.
The next question comes from the line of Bob Cornell with Barclays Capital. Please proceed.
Bob, you're back.
Well, I had the mute button on.
Did you go get a cup of coffee or something?
No, just fast fingers. You know, actually, you know, GE Capital had a great quarter, but maybe you could just take a minute and go through the reserve walk. I mean, that we went by that pretty quickly in the summary. It looks like, you say, write-offs were greater than new provisions, so that, you know, that was a big reason why reserves came down, I wonder. But, you know, maybe just give us a view over the balance of the year, Keith, and what we should expect there. And obviously, even ex Garanti, the numbers are good. Should we expect sequential earnings growth out of GE Capital?
Well, just first on the reserves, I think, you know, the profile will continue where you see write-offs higher than the new credit cost provisions. If you look at the percent of the new credit cost provision, you know, it's somewhere around 1.45%. That goes back to what I would call more normal historic levels, Bob. So I think, you know, that probably is a good indicator of, you know, what we could expect going forward as long as this portfolio continues to demonstrate improvements in delinquency and non-earning. So, you know, I think that dynamic will continue if you look at provisions, new provisions for losses at somewhere around that level. You know, the other dynamic that you have is impairments coming down. And that's going to depend upon how we see the market for the real estate equity book. And as I said, we've seen some positive indicators there. And year over year, it's obviously down quite a bit. So, I think the outlook is pretty good for improvements in profitability driven by lower credit losses. You see it in the fourth quarter. You see it in the first quarter. And I don't see any reason why that wouldn't continue. You know, for the total year, how do we feel about it? Obviously, if you look at GE Capital's results, they're better. You take out Garanti, and even if you normalize for not having Garanti's earnings going forward, you know, you're going to see a terrific performance out of GE Capital this year. As Jeff said, we feel very confident about our framework.
Yeah, I mean, you know, is there any seasonality in that business? I mean, I don't recall. I mean, you know, obviously you had these, you know, tremendous, you know, ups and downs the last couple of years, but in a normal year, what kind of seasonality would be? Is the first quarter, you know, typically, you know, the low point of the year? I mean, what can we expect sort of in a trend rate over the course of the year?
You know, we used to have a big bump in the third quarter, but I think we've really normalized and are pretty level. I can't think of one thing that's really popped out as a seasonality item today in GE Capital.
Second question for me, when I was trying to ask a question earlier when I got on mute about the Joint Strike Fighter engine. I mean, you're going to continue the work on that engine for a while, but what is sort of the GE view of that engine, and might you continue funding the development of that engine? I understand it's nearly complete. What's the outlook there?
Look, Bob, I think the engine's 85% complete. We're going to keep a small team in place to continue to work on development and see where we go in the 2012 budget cycle. Our basic thesis remains the same, which is this saves $20 billion over the life of the program. It's enjoyed bipartisan support for a lot of years. It's a program that's been over budget, and this is one of the ways to get competition, back in the game.
So, our engine actually has been the model engine in the whole Joint Strike Fighter program, which is over budget, not our engine. So it's really.
So we're gonna keep a team together.
Keep a team together. Okay, thanks, you guys.
Great,
thank you, Bob.
Your next question comes from the line of Shannon O'Callaghan with Nomura. Please proceed.
Hey, Shannon.
Morning.
Shannon.
Hey, so on E&I, we're getting kind of close to the target here. I mean, what's the plan if you get there pretty soon? I mean, do we start to ramp up on CLL, or do we shrink the business further? Where do you go from there?
We feel pretty good about the progress here, but we have a plan to continue to run off the red assets and grow the green assets, and you can see the runoff of the red assets is happening faster than we thought. We've had more success with dispositions. I think that's been very positive and maybe given us a little more room for growth on the CLL side even earlier than we thought. And our investments in the green assets, the growth in CLL volume, the growth in the consumer volume have been very strong. So, we're not planning on going below the 440 any target for 2012. We plan on getting there in an orderly way. I don't see any change to it.
Okay, and on the commercial real estate piece, I mean, the last couple of quarters you've been able to sell a decent amount of properties at kind of a small gain. Could we see some of the opposite of maybe some, opportunistic sales of other pieces, at losses, or how do you think about winding that down and opportunities now that things have stabilized?
Depends on the economics, really. If we believe we've got value in the property, we're going to do what we need to get that the most attractive value. And I think our headset on that has proven out over and through this cycle. I would not anticipate large sales at significant losses in the real estate business. We believe in our properties and our values. We feel like we're going to be able to recover them on the equity side, and that's coming true. We're also reducing our basis, obviously, with depreciation and write-offs, and we feel pretty good about the outlook. So we'll be opportunistic, but I don't see big sales at significant losses.
Okay, just last one. I don't know if I missed it, but tax rates by the pieces for the rest of the year.
Well, we haven't really given much of a forecast here. I'd say if you look at the rates in the first quarter, the GE rate ex-JEX was 22% ex the NBCU gain. I wouldn't expect the rate to be higher than that for the year. There are some as we go through the year, other opportunities that teams are working on that may bring that down slightly, but we'll be around the 20%. I would say for the year would be the estimate today. And on the GE capital rate at 18% in the quarter, I think you're going to be in the mid-teens for GE capital as you go forward. Well, we had a pretty high tax on the Garanti gain, and other than that, the entire profile of GE Capital was a normal rate on the pre-tax earnings, and our benefits, our structural benefits, were a little under $400 million, which is probably the run rate for the year today.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Yep.
So, Tom, we've had several requests to keep this to an hour, so we have about 5 minutes more. If we'd like to take everyone's call, if everyone could keep it to kind of one question, and we'll wrap up in within 5 minutes here.
Your next question comes from the line of Steve Winoker with Sanford Bernstein. Please proceed.
Good morning, Steve.
Hey, good morning. So I'll keep it to one. Covered a lot of ground. China. Give us a sense, if you could, for what you're seeing impact on given some of the macro energy complex decelerating, what you're experiencing there, and maybe overview. Thanks.
The overall revenues were up 12% in the quarter. What I would say, Steve, is that the healthcare business saw a pretty normal quarter with growth close to 20%. I think it was like 18%, something like that.
A little higher.
Aviation's got an outstanding backlog. And that, you know, that I think is pretty secure. You know, we won a lot of business last year, which will play through. And like I said earlier, you know, the 12th five-year plan is really really emphasizes environmental investing. So I think we're going to see some good opportunities in our energy business as we go through next year as well. So top line, I think, was 12% revenue growth, and we don't see anything, Steve, that suggests it should be less than that as we go through the year.
Okay, thanks.
Good. Thank you.
And your next question comes to the line of John Inch with Bank of America. Please proceed.
Yeah,
hey, John.
Thanks.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, guys. Just as a quick clarification, there wasn't a restructuring offset to the Grandi Bank gain, was there?
Not in G Capital, no. The only restructuring was on the page I covered on other items in the corporate side. A little bit of that was in capital, but we covered it on that page.
Yeah, okay. I just want to make sure there was nothing else.
No.
So my question is, the upcoming stress test with the Fed, you know, is there, I mean, how are you guys thinking about your real estate book? I mean, I'm just sort of trying to think if, you know, what could be a landmine is the fact that you still have these embedded losses in your real estate book that's, you know, not really accounted for the same way as, say, the banks do. Could that be some sort of a source of pressure that they would say, look, just write this down and, you know, kind of all systems go type of thing? Or how do you think we should think of that?
I don't think so. I think you should think that we have been doing stress tests a couple times a year. We do have regulators who are regulated by the Office of Thrift Supervision and the FDIC. And we do stress tests two times a year, and we do have to basically think through and be comparable to what the banks go through with their formal SCAP test. So I would say that we've been through it a couple of cycles now, and you know, we feel pretty good about the process we use and the stress that we put our portfolio through to make sure that we have enough capital and enough liquidity. But you know, the only difference is it obviously, as you say, is a new regulator, but we've got a lot of input. We're dealing with a lot of third parties who are obviously industry experts. We've hired people from the industry to help us with this who are on our team directly, who are industry and regulatory experts. And you know, I don't think that that's something different that could be dramatic as we go forward here.
Right. Thanks, Keith.
All right, John.
Our next question comes from the line of Chris Glynn with Oppenheimer. Please proceed.
Thanks. Just a lot on the
Chris. Good morning.
Yes. Good morning. A lot on the gas turbine side. Just switching over to wind quickly. Any thoughts on, you know, what you're seeing market share wise there, taking advantage of the downturn? And I know you weren't afraid to use price. And then thoughts on an eventual recovery shaping up there.
Well, I think as the AWEA data came out in January, I believe we had about 50% market share in the U.S. and then, you know, smaller in Europe and the rest of the world. I'd say in the first quarter, a lot of our deals are in places like Brazil, Canada, things like that. You know, what I've always thought, Chris, is that we really do have the lowest cost and the highest reliability in the industry, and I include in there the Chinese competitors. So we have, it gives us a lot of strategic flexibility when we look at the space. And so even as the market goes through cycles, I think we approach it from a position of strength. I don't think we have anything in mind today, but, you know, this, if you just look at the landscape, we've always had a philosophy of having, you know, broad fuel capability so that we don't have to, you know, we're in nuclear, we're in coal, we're in gas, we're in wind, we're in solar, we're in a lot of different things. I like our position in gas turbines and wind turbines, and I think it's going to play out over the next 3 to 5 years that those two will have a good future.
I think the one thing you see happening in our wind business is we're becoming better globally. You know, we had such a terrific position in the U.S. market, but today with the market where it is in the U.S., we are really competing effectively globally, and that's going to make us a better business. And the second thing, obviously, is the offshore wind business, which is going to grow, and we're investing, and we should have a significant position there as well. So, as we said earlier, we like our position in wind, and we like the outlook for the business. It's just we're working our way through this backlog that was pretty lucrative, that the margins on the new orders are lower.
Got it. Thanks a lot.
Yep.
And your next question comes from the line of Nigel Coe with Deutsche Bank. Please proceed.
Good morning, Nigel.
Hey, Nigel. Yeah, thanks. Hi, guys. Trevor, we're over an hour here, so I'll keep this really quick. Just Jeff, I thought the timing of the dividend announcement was interesting, and I just wanted, you know, what is the message you want to convey with that dividend increase? And then secondarily, you know, are we into an era of, you know, opportunistic dividend increases, or, you know, is your intention to go back to a sort of an annual December announcement?
You know, Nigel, look, I think what we want to convey is just confidence in the company first and foremost, and the fact that for a broad base of investors, the dividend is important, and we think that's a good message to send today. You know, good on good confidence in the company. The fact that you know, we've I think really effectively redeployed the capital from NBCU. The focus is really on dividend and buyback now, and just the broad importance of the dividend. I think that, you know, where we're going to is going to be, you know, we want the dividend to be, you know, an effective payout ratio, a good yield, very reliable. And so, you know, over time, we're going to get back to an annual dividend increase that we do that investors can count on. And, you know, we'll just see how that plays out. But I think overarching, Nigel, I want it to be confidence in the company.
Right. Thanks.
We're keeping that quick, Nigel. I think we have time. We're running over, so we'll take one more question, and then I have some announcements at the end.
Thank you. Our final question comes from the line of Deane Dray with Citi. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Hey, good morning, Dean.
Hey, just to stay on the topic of capital allocation, we got the message on focus on dividends and buybacks, acquisitions basically done for 2011. How about divestitures? I know I've asked this before, but and Jeff, you said this is the best portfolio you've had since you've been CEO, but are there opportunities for further portfolio reshaping?
You know, Dean, I just don't see it right now. You know, again, I think what we want to do is run the portfolio, the capital industrial, you know, the infrastructure capital portfolio we have, get very well, you know, execute well in 11, get positioned for simultaneous industrial and financial service growth in 12, you know, in that portfolio, generate a lot of cash, and have a lot of optionality around, you know, around what we do from a capital allocation standpoint. So I just, you know, I think we're going to generate a lot of good cash flow this year. You know, I think a lot of people have asked about the capital dividend. That, you know, our expectation is that capital restores its dividend at some point, and you know, that provides additional cash over time. And so, you know, we want to execute this play with excellence, and our investors will benefit from that.
Great. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, everyone. Just a couple of housekeeping items and some announcements here. The replay of today's webcast will be available this afternoon. We will be distributing our quarterly supplemental schedule for GE Capital also later today. And here's a couple of announcements. Next week on, you know, Wednesday, April 27th is our 2011 annual shareholders meeting in Salt Lake City. You know, we hope to see you there. On May 18th, Jeff will be presenting at the annual EPG conference, so that'll be the next big presentation. Our second quarter 2011 earnings webcast will also be held on July 22nd for your calendars. And then finally, we will be hosting a GE Energy meeting with special emphasis on oil and gas later this year on September 20th in the afternoon. We'll provide you more details regarding the meeting logistics at second quarter earnings, but we do expect to hold this meeting in the New York area. And as always, Joanne and I will be available to take your calls and questions today. Thank you, everyone.